नमोम विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा। सो आई I'm really sorry. Actually, I also forgot to record the session last week, so it did not get recorded. So I will do a very quick recap of what we saw last week, and then we will start to discussion. So we have been discussing from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the commentary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. So in that, we have been discussing this third section where when we had completed this third section and started the next section, but I'll do a quick recap of what we saw here. We were discussing on this theme of after Krishna expresses to Arjuna that you should fight because the soul is eternal. And the body is always going to get destroyed. Even while you are alive, the body is kaumaram, yavanam, jara. It is getting degraded and destroyed. That is the nature of the body. So I don't think there is any reason for you to lament. This is what, in essence, Krishna spoke in the previous verse. That was on the platform of Sankhya. But now he says, स्वधर्मम् अपि चावेक्ष्य न विकम्पितुम् अर्हसि धर्म्याधि युद्धात् श्रेयोऽन्यत् क्षत्रियस्य न विद्यते। माय डियर अर्जुन, इवन इफ यू कंसिडर द पॉइंट ऑफ परफॉर्मिंग योर प्रिस्क्राइब्ड ड्यूटीज, यू नो टिल नाउ वी हैव नॉट डिस्क्राइब्ड एनीथिंग अबाउट द प्रिस्क्राइब्ड ड्यूटीज, वर्णाश्रम ड्यूटीज, वी हैव डिस्कस्ड ओनली ऑन द प्लेटफॉर्म ऑफ द नेचर ऑफ सोल एंड बॉडी, बट लेट अस talk on the platform of karma. On the platform of karma, you mentioned that if you fight with your relatives and kill them or even fight with them, you will get infamy and you will not be able to enjoy and you will get sinful reactions. This is what you told. But Krishna says this is totally wrong understanding. Even considering your swadharma, you should not actually be fearful to engage in your swadharma of fighting, because kshatriyasya anyat shreyana vidyate, for there is nothing better for a warrior than to fight for the right cause, and this is the exact perfect cause to fight. So I don't think there is you have any reason to be fearful. Then he says, then in this context, if you remember, we did discuss about qualification. You know, what is the qualification for karma shraddha, jnana shraddha, bhakti shraddha? We had discussed all these things. And then we did discuss that, he continued that yadrichaya chopapannam swargadwaram apavritam sukhina kshatriya partha labante yuddhamidrisham. He says that actually happy are those kshatriyas to whom such opportunities for fighting a dharmic battle come without even without unsought, and swargadwaram apavritam, it actually opens the door for swarga. If they fight and win, then they get the kingdom, but if they fight and lose and die on the battlefield, you know, they go to swarga. Atachetvam imam dharmyam sangramam na karishyasi tata swadharmam kirtim cha hitva papam avapsyasi. In fact, actually, if you do not participate in this righteous war and give up your duty, actually, you will be committing sinful activity. Because for a person on the platform of dharma, he need not commit any separate sinful activity. But failing to perform his actual dharma in itself is sinful. And you will lose your kirti also. You will lose your fame as a very brave warrior, because people will think that you have run away from battlefield out of fear. Because a kshatriya does not leave battlefield because of compassion. The battlefield is not the place for a kshatriya to show his compassion. And no one sees that kind of compassion as compassion only. So this is not compassion. So you will be criticized as a coward, which you will not be able to tolerate. Akirtim chapi bhutani katayishyanti tevyayam sambhavitasya chakirtir maranadatirichyate. Bhutani avyayam katayishyanti te akirtim. And your infamy will become the talk of the town. So, and you are no ordinary person. You have accomplished so many things, Arjuna. You have single-handedly defeated this whole Kaurava army, which included Karna and Bhishma, Duryodhana, all these great warriors. In you know, just alone, you know, you have individually defeated this whole army. So you have accomplished a lot than many of them put together. So for such an accomplished person like you, this kind of dishonor would be worse than death. Better die on the battlefield once than to die every minute hearing this kind of criticism, because you will not be able to tolerate this kind of criticism. Bhayadranaduparatam mamsyante tvam maharataha esham chatvam bahumato bhutva yasyasi lagavam. So these Maharathis, they are themselves Maharathis, but yesham chatvam bahumato bhutva, but they consider you as actually very, very exalted. Very highly, they consider you very highly when it comes to your battlefield efficiency and your capacity. But Lagavam Yasisi, those very soon people, because memory is very short. The same people who glorified your capacity to fight and defeat, those same people will actually start criticizing you as being cowardly. Because memory is very short. They will not think that, oh, the same Arjuna defeated all of us. They will not think like that. So they will think that you are running out of fear. Yesham chatvam bahumato bhutva yasyasi lagavam. So they will suddenly start considering you very insignificant. And you have abandoned the battlefield out of fear. Avachya vadamscha bahun vadishyanti tavahitaha nindantas tava samartyam tato dukkataram nukim. So when such people will speak such unbearable words criticizing your abilities, do you think there could be anything more painful than that? Do you think you will be able to live peacefully? You said, if I don't kill them, I will live peacefully. If you don't kill them, and the same people will criticize you and make fun of you, do you think you can peacefully live after that? So your argument that you will peacefully live if you don't kill them is actually not a very sanguine argument, because this is not at all true. So therefore, Arjuna, hatova prapsisi swargam jitvava bokshase mahim tasmad uttishta kaunteya yuddhaya kritanischaya. Therefore, why you are worrying? Hatova prapsisi swargam, if you win on the battlefield, you will go to Swarga. Jitvava bokshase mahim. If you lose, you will go to Swarga. If you win, you will get the kingdom. Right? Therefore, tasmad uttishta kaunte. Therefore, get up, O Arjuna. Yuddhaya krita nischaya. And fight with determination. You know, just don't keep thinking too much. So then he makes a transition here. Krishna makes a transition by telling, actually, Arjuna, till now, I have been telling you to fight for some material cause. Either you will get Swarga or you will get the kingdom or you will get some happiness. Or I discouraged you from not fighting by telling that they will criticize you. You will not be able to tolerate criticism. But now let me tell you something. By fighting, you can get Swarga. By fighting, you can get the kingdom. But if you don't get attached to these lower goals, then by that same fighting, you know what? You can actually attain liberation. The act is same. The goal can be different. It can be a much higher goal. Just by fighting, you can attain liberation. That with the yogis and jnanis, by complete, stoppage of their sensory activities and performing such intense yoga, you know, they try to, what they try to achieve, just by fighting on the battlefield, you can attain liberation. This is possible, Arjuna. You like fighting. You are very good at fighting. And just by doing what you like, you can attain the highest goal of liberation. All that you need to do is just one thing. Sukha dukkha same kritva labha labhav jaya jayav tato yuddhaya yujyasva naivam papam avapsyasi. My dear Arjuna, if only you actually don't consider sukha dukkha labha 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 alabha jaya ajaya, because from victory comes gain of kingdom, and from gain of kingdom comes sukha. From ajaya, from defeat comes alabha, not getting the kingdom, and from not getting the kingdom comes dukkha or distress. So Krishna is telling, my dear Arjuna, let me tell you something. If you give up these considerations of sukha, dukkha, labha, alabha, jaya and ajaya, which means if you don't get attached to these lower goals, lower fruits, then just by this act of fighting on the battlefield, you can get liberation. Sukha dukkha same kritva labha labhav jaya jayav tato yuddhaya yujyasva naivam papam avapsyasi. In that way, you will not get any papa, but in reality, he will not get any punya also. Because papa or punya, one has to take rebirth, right? So he says that, in this we were discussing, this verse is a transition from Sakama to Nishkama Karma Yoga, where he says that a Sakama Karma Yogi, he wants piety because through piety he can gain enjoyment. And he does not want sin because he does not want to suffer. Okay. And a Nishkama Karma Yogi, he does not want piety also because he knows that piety will lead to rebirth and he does not want rebirth. And he does not want impiety also because he does not want to suffer. So he says, give up attachment to these lower fruits. Sukha dukkhe same kritva labha labhav jaya jayav tato yuddhaya yujyasva naivam papam avapsis. You will not get papa. In fact, you will not get punya also. Right. So he says, being equal in happiness and distress, which are caused by gain and loss, such as gain and loss of a kingdom, which are in turn caused by victory and defeat in the war, that is, understanding that both results are equal through a discerning mind, equipped with that knowledge, you will not incur sin at all. Lipyate nasa papena padmapatram ivambasa. Such a person will not be touched by sin or piety, just like a lotus leaf is not touched by water. So this is the instruction that Krishna gives here. And then he takes us to, Buddhi Yoga, which is, you can say, Nishkama Karma Yoga and actually Bhakti Yoga. So here, Krishna says, Eshate bhita sankye buddhir yoget vimam shrunu बुद्ध्या युक्तो यया पार्थ कर्मबंधम प्रहास्यसी। एषा ते अभिहिता सांख्ये। टिल नाउ आई हैव टॉट यू द अंडरस्टैंडिंग विच इज नेसेसरी फॉर द प्रोसेस ऑफ ज्ञान। सो विच वी हर्ड इज यू नो द डिफरेंस बिटवीन द नेचर ऑफ बॉडी एंड सोल। टिल नाउ आई हैव टोल्ड यू अबाउट दिस। टिल नाउ मीन्स टिल यू नो द प्रीवियस सेक्शन, नॉट द इमीडिएट सेक्शन दैट वॉज अबाउट सकाम कर्म योग। सो देन ही सेज दैट बुद्धिर योगे त्विमां श्रुणु। नाउ हियर अबाउट द अंडरस्टैंडिंग विच इज नेसेसरी फॉर बुद्धि योग, विच इज एक्चुअली हियर ट्रांसलेटेड एज भक्ति योग बै शिल विश्वनाथ चक्रवर्ती ठाकुर एंड शिल प्रभुपाद ऑल्सो बलदेव विद्याभूषण। Some of these verses he describes to be Nishkama Karma Yoga, and of course Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also does that. So then he says, Yaya Buddhya Yukto, and by engaging your intelligence in this yoga, Karma Bandham Prahasyasi, you will become free from the bondage of karma. I am going to tell you, forget about pious karma or impious karma, forget about giving up papa. You can give up punya also, and you can stop this karma bandhanam completely. This is possible. I will tell you how. How? By engaging your intelligence in this process of bhakti. So engaging one's intelligence means engaging one's faith, because from faith comes intelligence, right? Faith is the platform on which intelligence develops. So without the platform of faith, there is no scope for intelligence, because if we don't have faith in a particular source of knowledge or a body of knowledge, then we will not try to acquire intelligence from that source or body, right? So therefore here intelligence actually refers to faith. This we discussed last week. So he says, now I will tell you, buddhir yoge tvimam shrunu. Now you hear about this buddhi yoga that I am going to tell you. Buddhya yukta yaya, buddhya yukto yaya partha karma bandham prahasyasi. If you engage your intelligence in this buddhi yoga, you can easily overcome the karma bandhana, the bondage of karma. So he says, नेहा विक्रम नाशोस्ति प्रत्यवायो न विद्यते स्वल्पमप्यस्य धर्मस्य त्रायते महतो भयात्। ओके, वी स्टार्टेड डिस्कसिंग दिस। ही सेज इह अभिक्रम, इन दिस प्रोसेस ऑफ भक्ति योग न नाशः अस्ति, देयर इज नो लॉस बाय स्टॉपिंग विदाउट कंप्लीशन, राइट? इफ वी परफॉर्म भक्ति and you know, do only little bit of bhakti, that little bit result is definitely there. Whatever spiritual credit that we gain, that is eternally there. But karma yoga, jnana yoga is all not like that. If we perform karma yoga, let's say nishkama karma yoga, and not complete that process and leave it in between, then you know, we don't accomplish anything, or even sakama karma yoga for that matter. Maybe little bit of piety we may get, but that's all. But bhakti is not like that. Swalpam apyasya dharmasya. So he says that na iha abhikrama na nashah asti. In this process, there is no loss by stopping without completion. Pratyavayona vidyate, no sin incurred by not doing so. If a person who is qualified for bhakti, who has faith in bhakti, but does not perform bhakti, because this is possible, right? Adau shraddha tata sadhu sanga ata bhajana kriya. So there is you know, one can have faith, but between faith and actual practice of bhakti, there can be a time gap. You know, if I see in my own life, you won't believe there was a time gap of 6 years. If in retrospect, I'm telling, if I think about it in retrospect, you know, in almost 1999-2000, I came in touch with devotees. 1999, I came in touch with devotees, and I knew devotees. I developed faith. What these people are doing is right. These books that they are studying is right. And all that faith I had, but I personally did not start performing devotional service. Okay. But the qualification for bhakti, who is called a bhakti adhikari? One who possesses shraddha. That shraddha need not necessarily translate into bhajana kriya also. Even before that, faith transforms into devotional activity, still that person is considered to be a devotee, a bhakti adhikari. So if a bhakti adhikari does not perform bhakti, he does not get any sin. Whereas if a karma adhikari does not perform his karma, if he does not perform his varnashrama duty, it is sin. Whereas Krishna says, pratyavayona vidyate, there is no sin incurred if that person does not perform his devotional duty. Of course, he may not progress significantly. So as I mentioned, that I came in touch with devotees in 1999, and I had faith in whatever they were doing. I had faith in the process, faith in the books, everything. But it eventually took me 6 years, 2005, and thousands of miles away from where I got introduced. In the United States, I actually started my bhajana kriya. The first, you know, I started chanting Hare Krishna and consciously practicing bhakti only after 6 years and thousands of miles away. But in retrospect, having understood the science of bhakti, or to whatever extent I have understood, I could see that from 1999 I had Adav Shraddha. But it took me 6 years for bhajana kriya to manifest. So is it that being a bhakti adhikari since 1999, I did not perform any bhajana kriya for 6 years? So for not practicing something for which I was qualified, was I incurring sin? Krishna says no. Pratyavayona vidyate, there is no sin incurred by doing so. Trayate mahato bayat, one is delivered from birth and death even by practicing a little of this process. So we were trying to understand, what does it mean to escape birth and death? Let us see how many of you remember. We were trying to discuss this time that he says even little bit of bhakti, if one performs, he escapes birth and death. So is it that all of us who are here at the end of this life will not take birth again? This was the question that we discussed, and we did discuss the answer also. I just want to know if anyone remembers the answer. So Krishna says here, even little bit of practice, maybe one mala of chanting, one Hare Krishna Mahamantra chanting with faith, trayate mahato bayat, one is delivered from birth and death. Now my question to you is that, is there no next birth for any of us who are attending this session? What is your understanding? Okay, I see some things in the chat box. Yes, Vrajaralde Mataji says, his birth is not controlled by karma. Very good. Actually, yes, there will be rebirth till we reach prema. Till we reach prema, there will be no rebirth. Sorry, till we reach prema, there will be rebirth, but that rebirth in this material world is not controlled by karma. It is not controlled by karma, but it will be orchestrated by Krishna in such a way that we can continue our devotional practice from where we left. So karma for ordinary people, based on one's karma and swabhava, the next birth is decided. The next birth is decided based on karma and swabhava. Karma indicates what they deserve, and swabhava indicates what they desire. So trying to make a best match of what they desire and what they deserve, their birth is decided by law of karma, right? But for devotees, irrespective of course, what they ultimately desire is to establish a relationship with Krishna. But they don't immediately deserve to be in the spiritual world. Some purification is needed. So what happens is that Krishna facilitates the devotee's birth in the material world, so that he can continue his practice from where he left. So whatever is needed for him to take one step closer to attaining that eternal relationship with Krishna, Krishna orchestrates that. So birth is there, but that birth is not like a karmi's birth. So and there is a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam where Narada Muni, while speaking to Vyasadeva in the first canto, he says, Navai jano jatu katanchana vrajen mukunda sevi anyavad atra samshritam smaran mukundangri upaguhanam punar vihatu michen na rasagraho jana. He says that Navai jano jatu katanchana avrajen. So Mukunda Sevi jana, a person who is a servant of Lord Mukunda, Anyavad Navai jano, Navai, never ever, Jatu, never ever, Katanchana Avrajan, he does not return back to this material world. Anyavat means like others. So now the question is, he does not return to the material world like others, can be seen as he does not return to material world, but others return to material world. So like others who return to material world, he does not return. This is one understanding. But another understanding of he does not return to the material world like others means others return to the material world in a particular way, but this person returns to the material world in a different way for a whole different reason and purpose. Right? So it's not that devotees who have little bit practiced Krishna consciousness, it's not that there is no rebirth for them. But that rebirth is not to spend their karma, but that rebirth is to perfect their devotional service, and it is personally orchestrated by Krishna. So, Navai jano jatu katanchana avrajen mukunda sevi anyavad atra samsritim. The return back to this material world of a Mukunda Sevi, of a servant of Mukunda, is not like the return to this world of other practitioners. So, while that is controlled by karma, this is controlled by Krishna. And what does Krishna do? He says, Smaran Mukundangri Upaguhanam. Krishna makes the devotee, even though he might have given up his practice of Krishna consciousness, Krishna, as long as one may give up one's practice, but as long as even little bit of faith is there in Krishna consciousness, what Krishna does, Krishna will make that person remember. Smaran Mukundangri Upaguhanam. So Mukundangri Upaguhanam literally means Krishna will make that person remember the loving embrace of his lotus feet. But what it means in reality is that Krishna will make that person remember his wonderful days in Krishna consciousness. His wonderful devotee friendships. The wonderful time spent with the devotees. The wonderful prasadam that one had in the association of devotees. The wonderful chanting, the wonderful dancing, the wonderful Krishna Katha discussions. Even though he is now not practicing Krishna consciousness, Krishna takes the personal responsibility to remind the devotee of his wonderful days in Krishna consciousness, and in this way, create an appetite for following devotional service again. Smaran Mukundangri Upaguhanam Punar Vihatu Michen Na Rasagrahojana. So, when Krishna reminds that takes personal responsibility to remind the devotee of the wonderful days in happy practice of Krishna consciousness, the devotee gets inspired and he says, what am I doing? Krishna, Krishna, I am really sorry, Krishna. I will never ever give up your lotus feet again. Like that, he takes a vow. And Krishna feels happy. I really wish, my dear devotee, that you never give up my lotus feet, because I know that your happiness is only in embracing my lotus feet. So here, have my lotus feet. Keep embracing it. Don't give it up. But then, and the devotee very tightly embraces the lotus feet of Krishna. And then after some time, he again falls into some bad association, something unfavorable association or lack of good association, and he again gives up that lotus feet. Then Krishna feels bad. He says, look, I will again give you some remembrance. Smaran Mukundangri Upaguhanam. He again gives some remembrance of that lotus feet, remembrance of the wonderful experiences in Krishna consciousness. And then the devotee again comes back to his good sense. And he says, Krishna, what did I do? I am really sorry. Why did I give up your lotus feet? So I will never ever give up your lotus feet in my life. I will tightly embrace it. In this way, he tightly embraces the lotus feet of Krishna. And Krishna says, oh, thank you very much. Have it. Please embrace it nicely, because your happiness is only in embracing my lotus feet. But then again, he may falter. But Krishna never gives up on the devotee. And he never lets the devotee to be handled by law of karma. So Krishna takes personal responsibility of the devotee. As long as there is even an iota of pure devotional faith, however weak that pure devotional faith might be, but as long as he has that pure devotional faith, Krishna never gives it up. And the devotee will lose his pure devotional faith when he starts committing offenses. So when he starts committing offense after offense after offense after offense, then finally the devotee may lose his pure devotional faith. Then Krishna says, look, I am really sorry. I feel really bad for you. Now I will have to hand you over to the agency of karma. So I am really sorry. So he has to hand over. But till that person has the last strand of pure devotional faith, Krishna personally takes care. Krishna does not depute it to anyone. That devotee's life is personally taken care of by Krishna. So that's what he says here. Krishna himself says, Iha abhikrama, in this process, na nashah asti, there is no loss by stopping without completion. And pratyavayona vidyate, unlike the path of karma, if you don't perform bhakti, there is no sin. It is not sin. Just that you will not progress further, but there is no sin. And trayate mahato bayat, one is delivered from birth and death even by practicing a little bit of this process. So this is our understanding. The escaping birth and death means escaping birth and death that is governed by karma. Anyavad atra samsritim, like that. So Here, so there is a question here in the chat box. So if there is faith but no practice in this lifetime, will it yet help in the next birth? Definitely. Because faith is the qualification. If one has faith and if one manages not to lose that faith by committing offenses, then one will, it will definitely, that person's next life is also controlled by Krishna, not karma. This is the beauty. How much merciful is Krishna? Only faith, no bhajana kriya. Still Krishna says, I have, you know, you do bhajana kriya or not, just looking at your faith, I have taken your responsibility. I will not give it up. Till you give up that faith, I will not give up my responsibility of you. That is what Krishna says. Yes, in the next birth, if one has only faith but no practice, till his next life is taken care of by Krishna, perfectly orchestrated by Krishna. Okay, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Okay, there are further questions coming in the chat box. Okay, I will wait till we read this purport. You can type your questions, no problem. But till I complete this, after I complete this purport, I will take further questions. Okay, but you can still type your questions, and those of you who would like to verbally ask, you can verbally ask also. But I will, after this purport, I will pause for questions. Okay, so here Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, there are two types of yoga explained in this section of the chapter. So this is a section overview that is being described here. There are, this section has two parts. Okay, that's what Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says. Activities of bhakti, including hearing and chanting and other such activities. And the second is prescribed duties offered to the Lord with personal desire, without personal desire, without material desires, which is expressed later, starting with the verse Karmanyevadhikaraste. So this section talks about Buddhi Yoga. So Buddhi Yoga is of two types. One is engaging one's intelligence and activities in bhakti, or the activities of bhakti. And it, second is engaging one's intelligence and activities in Nishkama Karma Yoga. Both are called as Buddhi Yoga. So he says, before that, however, bhakti is described. So bhakti is described in this verse, starting from this verse, Neha Bikramana Shosti Pratyavayona Vidyate Swalpam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bayat. So before that, however, he says, before that, however, bhakti is discussed. Because bhakti alone and no other process is beyond the three modes, a person transcends the mode by performing bhakti yoga. Okay. So only by practicing bhakti yoga can one transcend the modes, because only bhakti is beyond three modes, right? Because sakama karma yoga is in rajogun, nishkama karma yoga karma mishra bhakti and jnana yoga and jnana mishra bhakti, ashtanga yoga and yoga mishra bhakti are all in sattva guna. Only pure devotional service is beyond the three modes. Rest is all within three modes only. So he says that thus the statement nistraigunyo bhava to Arjuna indicates that this section is about bhakti. Because in this section, few verses down the line, Krishna will say, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunyo Bhava Arjuna. Like that. So Nistraigunyo Bhava, means go beyond the three modes clearly indicates only bhakti. This is Vishnu Jagadakur's presentation. The nirguna nature of bhakti is also well supported by the statements of the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Jnana and karma cannot be said to be nistraigunya because of the presence of sattva in jnana and rajas in karma. So they are not nistraigunya. And the bhakti found in karma yoga in the form of offering one's prescribed actions to the Lord is present there, just makes karma lose its uselessness and bear material fruits. So therefore, even Nishkama Karma Yoga is actually Sattvaguna. Even though you may say that it is called as Nishkama, it is called as Nishkama because it has no material results. Ultimately, if you see, every process, practitioner of every process will think that I am Nishkama. And their definition of Nishkama will change. For example, okay, let me see if I have a place where I can write this. Oh, this is a long purport. Oh, this is a very long purport. Okay, maybe I'll have to pause somewhere to accommodate some questions because otherwise it will keep accumulating. But let me see. I will write here. So, a Sakama Karma Yogi also thinks he is Nishkama. Okay. A Nishkama Karma Yogi also thinks he is Nishkama. Okay. And a Jnana Yogi or an Ashtanga Yogi also thinks that he is Nishkama. And a bhakti yogi also thinks he is Nishkama. Okay. So now, if you ask a Sakama Karma Yogi, why do you think you are Nishkama? He says, look at this materialist. He has so many desires, which are all unsanctioned by the Vedic scriptures. You see, I have no such desire which is not sanctioned by the Vedic scriptures. So his definition of Nishkama is that no desire not sanctioned by Vedas. Therefore, I am Nishkama. And Nishkama Karma Yogi will say, why do you think you are Nishkama? He says, isn't it obvious? I have no material desires. I desire only liberation. Right? A Jnana Yogi and Ashtanga Yogi will also say the same thing. I have no material desires. I desire only liberation. A Bhakti Yogi says, why are you Nishkama? I have no material desires. I have no desire for liberation. I only desire pleasure of Krishna. Okay. So here, when a Bhakti Yogi says that I have no material desire, I am Nishkama, it means I have no selfish desire. I have no selfish desire as my prayojan. As an anartha, I may have many selfish desires which may manifest in the form of greed, lust, anger, etc. But as a prayojan, as a cherished goal, I have no selfish desire. Okay? But is, so therefore, these are all this nishkama, has very, subjective meaning. So a Nishkama Karma Yogi is Nishkamata and a Bhakti Yogi is Nishkam nature is actually different. Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakale Ashanta. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atayeva Shanta. But if you ask a Buddhist, the Buddhist will say even a bhakti yogi is not nishkama because he has a desire to please Krishna. Now, that is also a desire. So that is also some kama. Huh? So, but if you desire, but we say that bhakti yogi is nishkama because our definition of prema, of kama is atmendriya priti. Huh? Atmendriya priti vancha tara bole kam, krishnendriya priti icha dhare prema nam. Right? So, we are nishkama but not nishprema. We are not nish icha, but we are nishkama. When kama is defined as atmendriya priti, desire for one's own gratification, desire for selfish pleasure. But in that, if you take that definition of kama, then a nishkama karma yogi or a jnana yogi or an ashtanga yogi is not nishkama, because still desire for liberation is atmendriya priti. Desire for liberation is selfish. It may not be for sensory gratification, but it's nevertheless a selfish desire. But a bhakti yogi is not nishkama, but he is not niricha. He is not without icha. He has icha, but that icha is not selfish. It is for the pleasure of Krishna. And a sakama karma yogi, he says, I am nishkama because I don't have any non-sanctioned desire. Jo bhi mera icha hai, sab kuch Vedic literatures mein sanction kiya hua hai, uske alawa kuch bhi icha nahi hai, toh main bhi nishkami hu. That is his understanding. So the definition of kama varies from sakama karma yogi to nishkama karma yogi to jnana yogi, ashtanga yogi to bhakti yogi. The Buddhist will say, look, I am the true nishkam because I have no desire. Right? Like that. So these are, we have to understand, you know, these, the usage of these terminologies are very subjective to the way bhakti yogi uses the word nishkama. The way he defines kama, nishkama karma yogi may not define kama like that. So for a bhakti yogi, liberation is also an anartha. Whereas for a jnana yogi or an ashtanga yogi, liberation is an abhilasha. It is a cherished desire. It is not an anartha. Right? So he says, okay, the nirguna nature of bhakti is also well supported by the statements of the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. Jnana and karma cannot be said to be nistraigunya because of the presence of sattva in jnana and rajas in karma. And bhakti found in karma yoga in the form of offering one's prescribed actions to the Lord is present there just to make karma lose its uselessness and bear material fruits. This process of karma yoga does not have the designation of bhakti proper, because predominance of bhakti is absent. So, even though any process, whether it is karma yoga or jnana yoga or ashtanga yoga, has to have bhakti element in it. If bhakti element is not there, then the process will not be successful. Okay. But so therefore, can you say that karma yoga is also mishra bhakti? Huh? Can you say that jnana yoga is also mishra bhakti? Can you say ashtanga yoga is also mishra bhakti because it has an element of bhakti? Well, not really, because it all depends on predominance of that element. For example, if I sprinkle some few drops of water in a cup of salt, okay, enough for it to become little wet. Okay. So you would say, if I ask you, what is this? One would say, this is wet salt or soggy salt, like that. But if I take a glass of water and add a spoon of salt to it and mix it, and if I ask, what is this? You will say it is salty water. Even though both cups have a combination of water and salt. But if you see, one thing I am asking you, what is it? You are telling wet salt. another thing you are telling salty water, right? So both are a combination of salt and water. Why you are calling one as salt and another as water? Because of the predominance of it. One has predominance of water, so I am calling it salty water. Another has a predominance of salt, so therefore I am calling it as wet salt. In the same way, in Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, the element of bhakti is minimal and the element of Karma Jnana Yoga is maximum. So therefore it is called as Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, but it is not called as bhakti. But it is, one should understand that it is the bhakti element which is making that process of Karma Jnana or Yoga actually successful and not the elements of Karma Jnana and Yoga. So he says, if one considers karma offered to the Lord to be bhakti, then what would be the designation karma refer to? If you say, if I perform my prescribed duty, mera prescribed duty karta hu aur uska phal ko bhagwan ko arpan karta hu, to wo bhakti ho gaya na. Theek hai, agar wo bhakti hai to karma kya hai fir? So then what is karma? What is karma yoga? If you say karma yoga mein bhagwan ko arpan karna nahi hai. So agar bhagwan ko arpan karna nahi hai, to wo process to successful rahega hi nahi. That process will never be successful. So therefore he says that, you know, this is not actually, so therefore one may perform one's prescribed duties and offers the fruits to Krishna fully. Still that is not bhakti. That is, bhakti means shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, pada sevanam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakyam, atmanivedanam. That is bhakti. Okay. But of course, that does not mean whoever is performing his prescribed duties is performing karma and not bhakti. It's not like that. They may perform their occupational duty, but as long as it is performed in the mood of anukulyasya sankalpo pratikulyasya varjanam, I am accepting it because it is anukul for my bhakti, or I will reject it if it is pratikul for my bhakti, then that performance of occupational duty is not karma, but it is bhakti. Okay. So occupational duties by default is not necessarily karma. It's just that under what paradigm or in what mood one performs those occupational duties, that defines whether it is an act of karma or bhakti. So he says, if one says that it refers to prescribed karma not offered to the Lord, therefore Narada, that cannot be, because Narada says, Naishkarmyam api achutta bhava varjitam nashobate jnanam alam niranjanam kutap punashashvad abhadram ishvare nacharpitam karma yadapyakaranam. So he says, Naishkarmyam jnanam api nashobate achutta bhava varjitam. One may have elevated themselves to the platform of jnana. Okay. But that is not glorious. It will not give liberation. That jnana will not liberation if it is achyuta bhava varjitam, if it is devoid of bhakti to the Supreme Lord. Alam niranjanam. Okay, that jnana may to some extent destroy one's ignorance, but it will destroy the ignorance and keep on in the material world. And that ignorance will return back to that person if it is achyuta bhava varjitam. Kuta puna shashvada badram. What then to speak of this sakama karma which causes suffering both during practice and at the stage of perfection? Yadapyakaranam karma ishvarena charpitam. And what is the use of even this nishkama karma if the fruit is not offered to the Lord? Which means, if in nishkama karma, if the fruit is not offered to the Lord, then there is no proper result of that nishkama karma yoga. So which means nishkama karma yoga means by default the fruit has to be offered to Krishna. So which means if one performs one occupational duty according to one's varna and ashrama and offers the fruit to Krishna, that is not bhakti yoga. That is nishkama karma yoga only. Right? So this statement indicates that karma devoid of the Lord is completely useless. Therefore, in this verse and in the verses till 45, Bhakti characterized only by hearing, chanting, and other devotional acts practiced only to attain the sweetness of the Lord's lotus feet is being described. So till 45, 41 to 45 is pure devotional service we are going to discuss. Okay. Nishkama Karma Yoga will also be described. Both of these are indicated by the word Buddhi Yoga mentioned in 39. In the phrase Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Enamam Upayantite, the word Buddhi Yoga indicates Bhakti Yoga, because by Nishkama Karma Yoga one cannot attain Krishna. Krishna says Tesham Satatayuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Enamam Upayantite. So he says, I give Buddhi Yoga by which one can attain me. So there that Buddhi Yoga cannot be Nishkama Karma Yoga, because by Nishkama Karma Yoga one cannot attain Krishna. Only by Bhakti Yoga. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tatvatah tatomam tatvato gyatva vishate tadanantaram. Only by Bhakti one can attain Krishna. Okay. In the phrase Durenhi avaram karma Buddhi Yoga dananjaya. Okay. He says that Buddhi Yoga, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. So, in the phrase, Durena hi avaram karma Buddhi Yoga dananjaya. Because he mentioned that Buddhi Yoga in some context refers to Bhakti Yoga, and in some context it refers to Nishkama Karma Yoga. He says, in which context can you tell me one usage of Buddhi Yoga where it refers to Bhakti? He quotes this verse, 10th chapter. Tesham satatayuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantide. There the usage of the word buddhi yoga refers to bhakti yoga. Where does the usage of the word buddhi yoga refer to karma yoga? He says, dureni hi avaram karma buddhi yoga dananjaya. This is 2.49, where he says that keep this avara karma, keep this attached work far away by performing detached work. There he is talking about Nishkama Karma Yoga. Right. So, thus, this present verse is a glorification of the process of bhakti with hearing and chanting, which is beyond the modes of nature. In bhakti yoga, there is no destruction and there is also no sin incurred if the practice has just begun and then stopped. If karma yoga, however, is begun and then stopped, there is both destruction of the fruits of karma yoga and sinful reaction as well for the performer. So he will not get the fruits, and if a person qualified for karma does not perform karma, then the meter starts. The papa meter starts immediately. The moment he stops performing his karma, the papa meter starts immediately. But then one may say, oh, but then by non-performance of bhakti, which he is supposed to do, the aspiring practitioner should also not get any results. Agar bhakti yogi bhakti yoga ko band kar diya, if he stops performing his bhakti yoga, he should also not get any results. So he says, whatever little bhakti was there by the initial practice, even that small amount will certainly deliver him from the bondage of samsara. Even little, it will deliver him from the bondage of samsara. This is understood from such verses as the following. Yannama sakrit shravanat pukkashopi vimuchyate samsarat. Merely by hearing the holy name of the Lordship once. Of course, this once indicates with faith. Or without offenses. Even without faith, but it should be without offenses. Okay. Either or. Even chandalas, men of the lowest class, are freed from all material contamination. Right? And it is also seen in the example of Ajamila and others. One can see that the following statement by the Lord has the same meaning. So this is also from Bhagavatam, where it is mentioned that Nahi Anga Upakrame Dvamso Madharmasya Uddavanvapi Maya Vyavasita Samyag Nirgunatvadanashishaha. Where Krishna tells Uddhava in Uddhava Gita, he says, my dear Uddhava, because I have personally established it, this process of devotional service unto me is transcendental and free from any material motivation. Nirgunatvadanashishah. Certainly, a devotee never suffers even the slightest loss by adopting this process. Neha bikramanashosti pratyavayona vidyate. Right. In the Bhagavatam verse quoted about, Krishna also shows the cause of indestructibility of bhakti. Why is bhakti indestructible? As it is beyond the gunas, it can never be destroyed. The same reasoning should also be applied to the present Gita verse. One cannot say, however, that Nishkama Karma Yoga, even by being offered to the Lord, is beyond the modes of material nature. One should not say that, dekho, abhi main mera prescribed duties karunga aur Bhagawan ko phal ko arpan karunga. To kya three modes ke andar hai kya? If I offer the fruits of my prescribed duties to Krishna, I am offering it to Krishna, mind you. You think it is within three modes? I am offering it to Krishna, right? Krishna is beyond three modes. So by offering the fruits to Krishna, how can that process be within three modes? Someone may ask. He quotes the statement by Krishna only. Where Krishna says in Uddhava Gita, Madarpanam nishfalam va sattvikam nijakarmatat. Work performed as an offering to me without consideration of the fruit is considered to be in the mode of goodness. This is Krishna speaking in Uddhava Gita. Right? So this verse indicates that Nishkama Karma Yoga, even by the power of being offered to the Lord, is in the material mode of sattva. Right? Because the person has attachment to performing activities according to his varnandashrama. He is not attached to performing activities according to the desire of Krishna, which is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevanam. Right? So, this is a very powerful verse. There is a lot of concepts that we have discussed. I am sure there must be a lot of questions. There are a lot of questions in the chat box. In the meantime, if you have any questions, you can also raise your hands, or comments that you might want to share, you can also raise your hands. But if till anyone raises their hands, I will take some questions or discussion points from the chat box. So, okay, questions. So if there is faith but no oath, we have taken this. What if this assurance makes a devotee feel special and better than the other yogis? Well, it can make, see, anything. So then the Shastra should stop glorifying any process for what for what they really are, what is really their value, because anyone can become proud. See, we have to understand very clearly. We can become proud of anything. A beggar can become proud of his penny. Okay. Because pride is not a byproduct of what we possess or not possess. Pride is a byproduct of Rajogun. So if Rajogun is there, then we can become proud of what we have, whatever little we have. Right? So therefore, if one becomes proud, then by practice of bhakti, that Rajogun will go down and his pride will also go down proportional to that. So, but if the assurance is not there, then what is the impetus for someone to practice bhakti? So therefore the assurance Krishna has to give. If he does not give the assurance, then any of the assurance that one is supposed to get for bhakti, which bhakti can actually give, then what is the impetus for such a person to practice bhakti? So therefore, we should understand that, and by practice of bhakti, tadarajastamo bhava kamalobadayasche chetayete rana viddam sitam sattve prasidati. By practice of bhakti, the influence of rajogun, tamogun, which manifests in the form of kama krodha lobha moha madamatsarya, will go down, and one will progress to the path of bhakti. So one should not say that just by getting this assurance, one will become proud. You know, anyone can become proud of anything as long as rajogun is there. But by practice of bhakti, one can reduce rajogun and then one can address the problem of pride. The problem of pride is always due to rajogun and not because what one possesses or does not possess. If one has rajogun, then possessing something will make him proud, and not possessing something will make him envious and depressed. So therefore, it's not that pride only is the problem. The problem is rajogun. The three modes are the problem, like that. Okay, next question. Is having some degree of faith in Krishna is sufficient, or are there other requirements to not get handled by the law of karma? Krishna says faith is the only qualification for bhakti. So if one has that faith, then naturally over a period of time when that faith is nurtured, then it progresses to it manifests into bhajana kriya, then anartana vritti, and so on. Next question. How is it that a devotee takes so much time to come to bhajana kriya even after having that pure devotional faith? Is it because of the lack of proper sadhu sangha? Definitely, yes. Yeah, because the faith is there, but then if there is no sadhu sangha, then definitely bhajana kriya will take a long time. I can talk about myself. You know, that was the case. You know, I liked the process, but I somehow could not gel with the practitioners. So I always stayed away from the practitioners because I found that particular group of practitioners to be too hard and very tough and fanatic, with no scope for, you know, like they call the school of the hard knocks. So the school of the hard knocks, either, you know, it is like inside a boxing ring, either you keep fighting or you get knocked out. You know, that was the brand of bhakti that they were practicing, and I sort of really got scared with that brand of bhakti. So, you know, I sort of removed myself. But even though I had trust and faith in Prabhupada's books and the practice itself, but not probably that brand of bhakti. So I thought, because that was my first introduction to bhakti, I thought maybe all devotees are like this only. So I sort of said, you know, I'm not ready for it. So I stayed away from them. So because I stayed away from devotees, that Adav Shraddha did not get the nourishment of Sadhu Sangha. So it did not become Bhajana Kriya. Next question. If Krishna is taking care of that devotee from Shraddha stage only, then how is it that devotee taking so much time to become steady in Bhajana Kriya? Well, Krishna is taking care of the devotee, but he will not personally water that seed. So if you remember the metaphor of that seed of the, you know, creeper of bhakti, the bhakti lata creeper that comes in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, who is the mali? Who is the gardener who is watering that seed? Is it Krishna? Who is the mali who is watering that seed? Who is the mali? It is the sadhaka. It is the devotee who is the mali. So, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhaktilata Beach. So the seed may come through the collective effort of Guru and Krishna, but the mali is the sadhaka. He has to Shravana Kirtana Jale Karaye Shechan. So he has to pour the waters of Shravan and Kirtan. So if Krishna does everything, then how would Krishna get pleasure out of such a thing? You know, because Because Krishna is dealing with living entities who have the very precious jewel of Swatantrata, Swatantrata Ratna, the jewel of independent free will. So Krishna gets pleasure out of living entities when they utilize their jewel of independent free will to choose Krishna. Otherwise, Krishna has the capacity to force every living entity to, you know, forcibly take them from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha to Bhajana Kriya to Anartana Vritti to Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema. Forcibly make that living entity embrace Krishna. Krishna can do that. But Krishna will not get any pleasure out of it. Krishna wants to see the living entities exercise their only possession, which they can rightfully claim as theirs. That is Swatantrata Ratna, their independent free will. That is the only thing that belongs to the living entity. Rest, everything belongs to Krishna in this material world and in the spiritual world. In the material world or in the spiritual world, the living entity can rightfully claim as theirs only one thing, that is his free will. That which you possess, if you utilize it to love Krishna, Krishna becomes surrendered to you. Krishna becomes surrendered to that devotee. So why should it take so much time to become steady in Bhajana Kriya? Because the Mali is the sadhaka, the Mali is not Krishna. If Krishna has to do everything, then why should the devotee get the fruit of it? And what will Krishna get in return? What will Krishna get in return? So that is right. So if you forcibly make someone tell, I love you, you know, will that person, you know, someone may say at gunpoint, you know, tell me I love you. And then he says, oh, I really love you. And then do you think suddenly, you know, the person who is holding the gun will feel like so happy and glad and, you know, like that nothing is going to happen, right? So Krishna also does not take pleasure in that. Another question. In third canto, 29th chapter, Lord Kapiladev teaches his mother devotion in three modes. But bhakti is ahaituki and it is nirguna in several places. So how is it devotion in three modes? Yeah, but it is not devotion in three modes. It is the practitioner whose faith can be in three modes. It's a very long discussion. I am just giving you the essence. Okay. What Krishna talks about in that section, or what Kapiladev talks about in that section as bhakti in the mode of goodness, passion or ignorance, what it actually refers to is the practitioner's faith. Bhakti is actually beyond three modes only. Just like milk is sweet, right? But when that milk is mixed with some Karela juice, okay, that tastes bitter. So you may say, oh, milk is sweet, but here is bitter milk. So so milk is not bitter, but you mixed some Karela juice to it, right? That's why it's tasting bitter. So similarly, bhakti is beyond three modes, but if the faith of that practitioner, it has the contamination of sattva guna in the form of, let's say, if he has faith in bhakti, which is beyond three modes, and also has faith in jnana, which is sattva guni, if it is jnana mishra bhakti shraddha, that jnana mishra bhakti shraddha is not beyond three gunas. It is within three gunas only, right? Because the jnana element is within three guna. Even in that, the bhakti element is beyond three guna. Okay. So the jnana element is sattva guni. But the bhakti element is beyond three modes. bhakti element is beyond 3 moons. So therefore still bhakti is beyond 3 moons. So sattvaguni bhakti does not mean bhakti is in sattvaguna. It just means that apart from bhakti, in the faith of the practitioner, there is a sattvaguni element in his shraddha, in his faith. That's what it means. Okay, next. Yat karoshi yadashnasi, there is a next question in the chat box. Yat karoshi yadashnasi verse, this means, will it lead to goodness only? No, the practice is in goodness. But the result of that practice is, as we will see, it will lead to sukhaishwaryottara mukti. You know, it will lead to Vaikuntha but not prema, because it is considered to be karma mishra bhakti. So karma mishra bhakti can lead up to Vaikuntha, but it cannot lead to prema. Anyway, this is a long discussion. I don't want to take up this discussion right now. Anyway, are there any quick comments, questions which devotees would like to verbally ask? You can please raise your hands. You know, if you want to share some thoughts or questions, because you know it would not be good in a 1.5 hour session and there is not a single verbal question. So at least for the purpose of, you know, not disappointing, you know, at least one point or some thoughts or some questions anyone would like to verbally share. Okay, if there are no questions, then I think we should continue. Okay, there is one question. Yes, Prabhu, Samsung.
So, Prabhuji, regarding this faith that we were speaking about, so if somebody, like, say, is chanting, mm-hmm. and he actually somehow they're actually drifts away, but he has faith in the Lord, he might have a little. You know, must be done some offenses or something like that, but his faith is very strong in the Lord. Mm-hmm. But because of offenses, he actually, you know, stops chanting and all, but he might be doing some other services as well. Mm-hmm. So then what is the hope for this person?
Well, I mean, if he gives up, see, offense does not immediately make his faith zero. So the faith to engage in chanting may have gone. Faith to serve the devotees may be there, or the faith to serve Krishna may be there. So then the Shraddha is still there. Even though Bhajana Kriya may not happen in the form of hearing and chanting, but Bhajana Kriya may happen in the form of, you know, service. So still Krishna takes care of him. But if he continues to offend, if his offenses continue further and further and further and further, then he will lose his devotional credits more and more and more and more and more. And finally, when he may lose, there may be no more devotional credits left to lose any further. At that point of time, actually, he will stop doing that minimal service also that he is doing. He will stop that. And he will be handed over to the karma, the realm of karma, like that.
Okay. So let's assume that he has stopped chanting he's not even that offensive to the Vaishnavas.
Uh-huh.
He's serving. He likes to serve and he likes to do kirtan and all. Uh-huh. And all of a sudden he leaves this body.
Uh-huh.
Then what is the hope for him in the next life?
Krishna will take care. His next birth is not decided by karma. It will be decided by Krishna. Krishna will arrange for his next birth to take place at such a place where he can exercise his Shraddha, can manifest into Sadhu Sangha and Bhajana Kriya, and he can continue further.
Okay. If we pray and we request to Krishna, then will that thing be, you know, accepted on you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everyone receives bhakti due to the mercy of other devotees only. So the mercy of the other devotees can come in the form of prayers. The mercy of other devotees can come in the form of opportunities to serve. It can come in any way. Prayer is definitely one very powerful way by which one receives that mercy.
Okay, but the one who is praying also, he should also have some credits so that, you know, his prayers are answered.
The very fact that he is praying to Krishna means he has some faith in Krishna. That is his credit.
Okay. Okay, Prabhuji.
Shyamlal Prabhu.
Yes, Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Hare Bol Prabhu.
Yeah, so I was just thinking, as a Nishkam Karma Yogi, and Bhakti Yogi, the Nishkam Karma Yogi would, if we look at it from the material point of view or from the common man point of view, he is actually dedicated everything, in the sense, no material desires, no practically no anarthas. So
I didn't say that, bro.
There are no material desires in Nishkam Karma Yogi, right?
Well, we also don't have any material desires, a devotee also. In the sense, we may have material desires as anarthas, right? Like, you know, we may have some lust or anger or greed.
Correct.
As anarthas, but that is not our goal. Our goal is to establish a relationship with Krishna. That is our goal. But there may also be this side anarthas which may be there. So similarly, a Nishkama Karma Yogi is not free of anarthas. But his goal is clear. Purification of heart is his goal, but he is not yet purified.
Okay.
So he may gradually become purified later, just like we have our anartha navritti stage, and Nishkama Karma Yogi also gradually he may also accomplish anartha navritti at some stage. But a Nishkama Karma Yogi in the beginning stages is not necessarily free of anarthas. It's certainly not.
Okay. So my thought process was, as Krishna says, antakali timame vasmar mukta kalevaram. It is because even a sakam karma yogi is offering to Krishna, and nishkam karma yogi is also offering whatever. The Krishna element is there. So wouldn't it be that he would also remember Krishna at the time of death? No,
because generally people don't remember the means. People remember the end. The goal is always more attractive than the process. So therefore, these people are not attracted to Krishna. They are Munir Moksha Parayana. They are not Narayana Parayana. So a Narayana Parayana can think of Krishna because his goal is Krishna. He likes Krishna. Whereas a Moksha Parayana likes Moksha. So at the time of death, there is a good chance that he will think of Moksha, or how ready am I for attaining Moksha, than think of Krishna actually. So it is not necessary that at the end of life they may think of Krishna. Not necessary. And moreover, for a devotee, this antakalecha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram, this principle is not compulsory for a devotee actually. This comes in the sixth chapter of, this comes in the eighth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, right? So this comes in the eighth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which talks actually about Yoga Mishra Bhakti. But for practicing pure devotees, even if they don't remember Krishna, Krishna will remember them. So that principle is not compulsory for pure devotees that at the time of death they should remember Krishna. Even if they don't, you know, Krishna takes care of them actually.
Okay. Well, actually, my I don't know whether it's the right time to ask you, because I don't know how much time you have.
It depends on the question, bro. And so you can ask the question. If I can answer it very quickly, then maybe we can take.
Yeah, the reason is because in the ICU, I see many deaths, you know, in Bhaktivedanta the hospital. We've seen devotees pass away. We've seen so-called non-devotees pass away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether they're Muslims, Christians, and but many times we've noticed that they may be from other religions also.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as the kirtan is on, and you see that there is a different peace on the face.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them have it.
Mm-hmm.
And our ICU always has kirtan on.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that the soul who is leaving
mm-hmm.
is hearing the holy name.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason I asked this question was that some practice of religion,
mm-hmm.
form of religion,
mm-hmm.
Somehow that person has come to a point where at the moment he is leaving his body,
mm-hmm.
that is Krishna's holy name.
Mm-hmm.
So, not all of them would have been dovetailing their lifetimes towards, you know, bhakti or... So, how is it that they are qualified for Antakare Jamameva? I mean, it may seem irrelevant at this point, but
they are hearing does not mean it is entering their ears, but smaranam means it has entered their heart and they are actively thinking about Krishna. So okay. Their hearing does not necessarily mean smaranam there.
Okay.
So whoever is hearing. So if a devotee is hearing, it may trigger his remembrance of Krishna. If his pain and other attachments are not so strong, the hearing may trigger his remembrance of Krishna to some extent. If it is a non-devotee, his hearing of Krishna, Krishna's name, may actually give him some sukriti. At the most, it may not necessarily trigger remembrance of Krishna. If it is a non-devotee who, after hearing the names of Krishna, gets annoyed, thinking that I am trying to speak something, but I'm telling, I'm not criticizing Bhaktivedanta Hospital's ICU for this, but I'm just hypothetical situation where he may think that, I'm already, you know, I'm not able to speak loud and I'm trying to speak something, call someone's attention, but this constant kirtan is going on behind, I'm not even able to communicate properly and, you know, in an audible way. Like that thinking, he may give up his body. So which means, you know, he's hearing, but it is creating an unfavorable mood in his mind. So different things can happen. So Shravanam does not necessarily immediately translate into Smaranam. Actually, I will end with this one point that we were just recently discussing from Bhakti Sandarbha, where Srila Jiva Goswami says, when sufficient Shravanam and Kirtanam happens and when the heart becomes purified by sufficient Shravanam and Kirtanam, then Smaranam comes, because Smaranam requires a particular level of purification of heart. When the heart becomes purified to a particular degree, only then smaranam is possible in such a heart. So otherwise just shravanam need not necessarily lead to smaranam actually.
Okay. Okay. Fine. I mean, maybe we can have a detailed discussion some other time or when we come to the 8th chapter probably.
Yeah, sure, bro.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so thank you all very much for your very attentive hearing and your nice participation. It was wonderful. So hoping to have your association again next week. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur Pad Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.